Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. It's been a couple of weeks, Max. Do you want to start with your basketball team? Where do you want to go here? Because, you had a great approach to the NBA playoffs, and I really respected your approach. You said, it's been pretty positive in the LA region lately. I'm just going to enjoy the basketball. Have you been able to just enjoy the basketball? Or are you a little bit bummed at the Lakers being down to the Phoenix Suns?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't bummed. The thing is I removed all emotion from it once both Anthony Davis and LeBron got hurt.
The two good players.
The two best players. And it just felt like at every turn someone was going to get hurt. So I removed the emotional side from it, tried to appreciate what has been going on. Obviously, it's still a bummer that they stink. Anthony Davis, unfortunately, just cannot possibly ever stay healthy. It's such a shame considering just like how good he is. The only part of it that's like really sucks is like now that I live in Phoenix, I mean, all of my friends are Suns fans. And I'm just getting bombarded with like these, just so much trash talk and I'm not giving any out. I'm just receiving it. And it's, if you're a Suns fan out there, if you're my friend listening to this, the reason I'm not giving any out is because I don't care about you guys. Like, They told me that at Bevy the other day, there was a big Beat LA chant. And I'm like, there's never once in the history of Los Angeles been a Beat the Phoenix Suns chant because no one's ever cared. So like, I'm happy for them, but just getting yelled at all the time has made me care a little bit. So it's a shame. We're just getting, beat up right now. The good news is being on the East Coast is I could not watch any of that basketball game last night that we lost by 30. So that felt good. So there's some positives there, but yeah, of course it's a shame. Can't obviously win them all. Hopefully we make a little comeback. It doesn't look great. I'm happy for the Suns as a team, not as a fan base. As I've mentioned, they're quite annoying right now. But I respect Chris Paul. I really like Devin Booker. I know you like Ayton being an Arizona guy. So it's like fun team to watch.
He's looked better in the playoffs. I don't know. I mean, rarely do you get the rookie type of playoff guy that steps up in these moments, but he's
Tyler
doing
Hero.
It.
2 years in a row.
You went to a game the other day, didn't you?
Yeah, we went to the Lakers won game two, and it was really fun. Like, the arena was buzzing. Like, it was rowdy. It was really cool. I hadn't been to a sporting event in so long. I was almost like nervous to go. It was really enjoyable. But it was awesome to see. When you go to a place, it's kind of like the Warriors back in the day when they hadn't been in so long, and they had the Baron Davis team. I can't forget what they called it. What do they call that team? Like, not the dream team, but like when the crowd was crazy, whatever, I'm blanking. But when you get everybody, like all the fans, true fans behind it, the games are just really loud and really, really exciting. So it was cool to experience. I'd never been to a playoff basketball game. So it was awesome.
Yeah. They were was that the We Believe Warriors?
We Believe,
is that the team?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
That was the Baron Davis celebration. And then Steph had to pull it back out in the playoffs this year. Can I ask you, is there a chance, this is a side basketball take, but would this have been a better series if it was Warriors-Suns? Is that a possibility that the Warriors would have just beat the Lakers in all the play-in game stuff? Is there a chance that would have been more fun to watch with the injuries?
Yeah, it probably would have been. I mean, anytime Steph plays, I think it's probably more fun to watch.
That's a good point.
So I guess he kind of is like, he's a, like a lot like how we talk about Tiger in the sense that like, he doesn't move the needle. He is the needle. I feel like he is the number one guy everybody would want to watch. So I feel like anytime you can get Warriors in, it would be great, but they lost.
So, yeah. Well, no, it's a good point.
Unfortunately. Yeah. I wish John Morant was in every playoff game ever, or Dame Lillard. Like, I'm getting all these texts this morning about, from you guys about Dame, and from Peter about Dame. And it's like, I slept, obviously was asleep and didn't get to see it finish, I guess. But, I go and look, and like, I go to look at the box score. I'm like, oh, they lost. Okay. it's just such a, it's just ridiculous. So.
Oh, I've now fallen asleep on my couch two of the last three nights because of the East Coast basketball thing. Like yeah. I'm trying everything I've got internally to stay up and watch these games. And then it's just like, my body's like, sorry, man, you're 37. I am out. OUT out. But I try. I battle against Father Time as much as I can. But let's talk a little golf. You've had a couple of weeks off. You got a chance to kind of chill and do some personal stuff and things like that. Back at it this week, back at Muirfield Village. Big talk this week, course changes, but I want to talk about you first. How was kind of a little bit of time away from it? Did you get a chance to do some work and stuff? Because, you know, the crazy thing about that PGA week was that first round. I mean, you played your tail off on Thursday, really, for what, 16 holes, and it was tough conditions, and you were kind of on that wrong side of the draw, and you had a chance to kind of take advantage. I know you had a mishap there at 17, but it seemed like you still kind of had it rolling for 16 holes in tough conditions in the wind in the afternoon.
It's funny you said wrong side of the draw, because I thought I was on the right side of the draw, and then other people told us we weren't. So it's always funny with golf. Like there's, I thought we were on the wrong side or right side of the draw and got lucky because I guess I don't know. But yeah, it was obviously a bummer. One kind of bad hole, and it was weird. My putting and short game just didn't hold me in. I played really, really, really well, and then played pretty good the next day too, and just, you know, kind of packed it in a bit with like nine holes to go, which wasn't great, but it was fun.
How was Bones?
Of course.
How was Bones? How was Bones? Was it awesome?
Like, amazing. Yeah, it was so cool. He is all world, lived up to the hype and then some. So it was really cool being around him. I learned a bit from him. I haven't put together in a major. I'm looking forward to the US Open for the next opportunity, but it's been frustrating because, you know, my game felt really good that week. And it just like kind of stinks. It always leaves a bad taste in your mouth when one hole or two holes just kind of seem to like set the precedent on the tournament. I could have done a better job the second day of really, you know, getting off to a better start, but it was just weird. I played the second hole of that Friday and had a pretty easy chip and didn't hit it very good and left myself like 12, 15 feet instead of like two and then just missed the putt. And I like, it was just hard to get back into it. Just felt like I wasn't scoring well at all. You know, cause like you mentioned the day before, I played 18 holes of or 17 holes of really good ball striking, 1-3 iron, and then actually I got lucky and it left me in a decent spot. Awkward but decent, and then kind of screwed that up from there. And then so it was, you know, it's just a bummer. But I wish I had a little more time off. I've had basically a week. We flew home. This is a part of the season that's hard for West Coast people, I think,
because just back and forth, right? It just feels like
been
that.
A lot of back and forth. So like I flew home Saturday, but that, you know, that's like a travel day. I got in early enough, but that's a travel day. I actually ended up practicing Saturday. That was probably the most frustrated I've been after a golf tournament in a long time. And then practiced Sunday. So it didn't really feel like I got any break. Then all week, you know, grinded. And then on Thursday, we had to drive out to, got to drive out to California for Stevie F. Baby's wedding.
Get the mention in. It's going to be a good week.
I don't want to blow up his wife's Instagram, but I will say that his wife, she changed her Instagram name as one does when their name changes, like Lacey changed it to Lacey Homa at some point. And Sarah changed it as a similar play on words with how Steven does his. And it's just like, it's the coolest, smartest thing I've seen. It's like a perfect kind of like millennial, but like fun thing to do. Because obviously social media is not like proper and legit. So it was great. But it was really fun to see everybody. It was like a cool recharge of batteries. It was a lot of beers. It's a bit exhausting. But it was so fun. I mean, I've known them for so long. I've known his wife longer than I've known him. So It was just, I had a blast. It was really cool. And you've got Henry's birthday coming. He's about to be two.
Two. It's crazy. So after this podcast, we're recording on Wednesday morning. Now I got to go put together. There are, not joking, 7 boxes. And this, we don't even do the big birthday thing. It's just one of them is like, he's obsessed with climbing on stuff. So one of them is one of those jungle gym things you got to put together. And it just came in all these boxes. I'm looking at Cindy. I'm like, he's two. He's not 20. I mean, what is this set? And then there's a car, one of our family members sent. It's starting though, Max, where you get the presents they other people send that you have to put together.
Yeah.
And so the dad basically just spends hours upon hours, like, you know, the grain 5 o'clock shadow, and you're sweating and you're miserable and nobody cares that you're miserable. So that's my Wednesday after this podcast. So I'm going to enjoy the next little bit of time with you. And then I get to go put it together. But my goodness, the kid is a nut, and it's so much fun to be around him. I can't believe he's already two. So I wanted to ask a couple of Bones things. One Bones question is, like, what was one major thing you took away from Bones in the moment? So like Thursday, Friday, playing the event, playing a major championship, that you and Joe might bring into play the way you guys kind of go about your business?
Ooh.
If anything.
You know, what's interesting about that is I don't think anything, because I think that the hardest part about having him there, and it's absolutely, and he would agree, is not a discredit to him, is that was beyond, like, easily the hardest part, because it was really windy, and Joe and I have a pretty good understanding of, you know, what shot I'm already going to hit for the most part.
Right.
And that's
like, you guys know it as you're walking up to it.
Yeah. A little more. So Joe will know what shot I'm going to be comfortable with. Bones kind of almost, he didn't ask, but I will say this. Once Bones knew what I was going to do was, once he knew, like, he was so direct. Like, he does such a good job of, like, being super, like, the last thing he said seemed to be really, like, strong and, like,
authoritative. Yes, it's like, you know what you're doing.
He's quite good. I don't know if I was just noticing that because it was different than, you know, Joe's voice, because I think Joe's quite good at that. But the thing I learned the most from Bones really was in the practice, or I was most impressed by it, was in the practice round days. He's really, like, inquisitive. He'll ask, like, hey, if we're here and you're in between, would you rather leave it here or here? And then he also, like, you know, I'd ask him about, like, what do you think about this pin? And he would be like, well, I think, you know, this is one we have to get after because, you know, I know it looks kind of scary, but, like, you know, you guys are the best players in the world and blah, blah, blah. Like, he really, really kept talking about playing to win the golf tournament and setting up the golf tournament to win it. And I thought that was, you know, just how much his mind was on that was really interesting in the strategy portion. Obviously not saying we're not thinking that, but I definitely noticed I go hole by hole and just try to plot my way around each hole instead of the whole golf course, if that makes sense, for 72 holes. So it's like at some point, like, hey, where are you going to make your birdies? And that's kind of what Bones was getting at. And that's, you know, that was really cool. But he's just he's really, really smart. And, like, he always not only knows where to leave the ball if you're going to miss the green, but he can explain to you so quickly why it would be bad over there that it almost puts you in more. So I guess that would answer your question. In the moment, it almost puts in more confidence in the sense that, okay, I definitely don't want to be over there. But he never makes you, like, scared to be there. It's just like
he points it out. It's all positive
speak. That will be hard because of this.
Interesting.
So, you know, we can be over here. It's just like he does a really good job of that. Again, I think Joe does a really good job of a lot of that. But for sure, the thing I'll take from Bones was the pre-tournament stuff. I thought that was, like, next level. His brain just, like, was always firing, which I found really cool.
Let's take a quick break to talk to you about Rapsodo, one of our favorite sponsors in the world. Rapsodo is a mobile launch monitor. It's the only golf launch monitor that provides instant feedback with video replay, an active shot tracker, and data overlay. What does that tell you? Well, you set your phone up on the device and it records your video, so you get to watch your beautiful golf swing, and it gives you instant information right there. You can post those videos on social media if you'd like to share how far you can hit your driver or how accurate you are with a 7-iron. It is awesome. It's perfect for 2021. It can be used indoors, outdoors, with a net, anywhere you want to use it. Swings are stored in the MLM app, which allows users to review data from different sessions and easily export captures that they have of their golf swings. And how about the accuracy of this device? Because it's $500 for one of these devices. Most swing mobile devices are five figures, if you will. This accuracy of the Rapsodo mobile launch monitor is within 2% of a $20,000 unit. Imagine that, like you were driving a car or an airplane, and there was a cheaper model that was this close to the real deal. Unbelievable in terms of what you can afford and what you can have in your golf bag, attached to your golf bag, easy to carry around. I always have mine with me, locked right in there on the golf bag next to my rangefinder, and it's perfect. And I mentioned the cost, just $50. Rapsodo is offering a limited time discount right now of $50. So now you can save even more money if you visit Rapsodo, that's rapsodo.com/grip, rapsodo.com/grip, and use the code GRIP as you check out. Boom, you save $50 right off the top. So now the device is even cheaper. And as I mentioned, within 2% of a $20,000 unit. Gives you all the information, all the stats, everything you need. And let me just give you our stat of the week, our Rapsodo stat of the week. Jason Kokrak, who won for the second time on the PGA Tour this past week at the Charles Schwab Challenge, driving accuracy of 73.21%. Imagine how far the guy hits the ball, and he's hitting 73% of his fairways, and he's rolling the rock well this year. I think he's sixth on the PGA Tour in strokes gained putting. That is an amazing recipe for multiple wins for a 35-year-old. That is impressive, as is the Rapsodo mobile launch monitor. I promise you'll love it. It is necessary. That's what I'll say. It's necessary to know your numbers, and this allows you that at a very, very reasonable cost. Check it out, rapsodo.com/grip, and use that code GRIP to save $50. We haven't talked about your boy yet and his run at the four ball.
Yeah,
can you give Joe a little love on this? I mean, listen, I know it's a shame, but I mean, that's damn impressive to just get to match play. These guys don't play golf. I mean, they have jobs.
Yeah, it was so impressive. It was just such a shame because they lost in the first round of match play after qualifying in like sixth place. They started their tournament off with five straight birdies
so
after
crazy.
Not playing a competitive round in like 8 years. And yeah, and then they played great both days. And then, yeah, first round of match play, they shot six under and lost. They had both had short birdie putts on 18. And this kid made a 15-footer to beat them before they had a chance to putt as they were one down going in. And it was I was getting updates from Peter, who was caddying for Johnny. And first off, the round took 6 hours and 20 minutes match play.
That's what Joe texted me, 6:20.
6:20. I mean, I was playing golf that day with some buddies, and we were grinding, watching them on the internet. And we started realizing we were playing three holes in the time they played one. So I texted Peter and I said, "Hey man, I need like live updates. This is nauseatingly slow." So by the way, it's not just pro golf, golf in general has gotten slow. But yeah, so he was giving me updates, which was really fun. And I guess Joe on 17,
par three,
and had a 10 footer to keep the match alive, made it and screamed, "Come on," on the green. So I know Joe's talked about how much fun he had. They're already talking about going next year. I'm really excited that they had a blast. I'm really excited that they played well because I know that they're really good. It's a shame they lost, especially playing so well. But I think it only like gets them more like invigorated to play again, which I think is really cool. Plus like USGA events are just awesome. And I'm glad they got to experience like, you know, even the qualifiers are like, you know, different than a PGA Tour Monday qualifier. So like,
definitely.
They're built up. So, but yeah, it's cool. He's a great golfer, man. He's just amazing. So it's, you know, think about, not only is he not, I mean, he probably plays a little more golf than maybe some people with a full-time job in the sense that will play golf on the road when he can bring his clubs, but he doesn't play very much golf. And he's carrying a bag that is literally lowering one side of his body. So he's like doing absolutely nothing to like improve his chances of being great at golf. Yet every time we come home and he does get opportunities to play, he plays really well. He like loves to grind. So it's just like really impressive to see him come go out in a tournament and put it together.
Our boy Nicholas Frank sent a, I love this. He sent in one of those. He's the guy that makes all of our Get a Grip. By the way, follow us on Instagram at Get a Grip Pod. But he makes all the images of you. We've got one this week, you know, for your playing at the Memorial. He makes one of Joe for the four ball we posted on the Instagram account. And I was loving it. I asked him if he could find just a whole bunch of pictures of Joe's head and try to find a whole bunch of like different iterations of the beard, you know, because obviously he had the long beard for so long. He's like, man, I couldn't dive too deep into Getty. I had to just pull this one out. I was like, it looks great. But yeah, I was following along, man. I was texting him. I was all fired up. Joe sent me a text last week. He's like, hey, how far are you from River Highlands for Travelers Week? I said, not that far. He's like, we're playing golf that week. I'm like, all right, we're trying to rope home in as well. We'll try to get a day out. But I was fired up. Again, people don't understand how hard it is, first of all, to qualify into those things and to make match play. I mean, that's kind of, I think if you're not a Preston Summer Hayes type, you know, your goal when you get there is let's try to make match play. You know, I want to make match play. Let's make match play and see what can happen. And for them to play as well as they play just to get there, as you mentioned, to finish sixth, that is damn impressive. It is so hard to do something like that, to turn it on when you need to turn it on. So shout out to your boy. I was pumped for him. I was very proud of him. And I'm excited to see what they can do. Speaking of very impressive and proud of, I wanted to ask you, a guy who has spent time on the web, now Korn Ferry Tour, what we're seeing from this Cameron Young kid. We had him on Golf Today. You could find that on social media. I retweeted it from the Golf Today account. But we had Cam on our show Tuesday. So he wins back-to-back Korn Ferry Tour events. It's only the 10th player to ever do it. 37 under par, two straight weeks. Led or co-led every round, Max, for eight straight rounds. You know, winning on the PGA Tour is wild. I mean, you talk about it. You've talked about how hard it is. Joel Damon came on and talked about how hard it is to win on the PGA Tour. But the hunger on the Korn Ferry Tour, can you just speak on that? Because it's all, I mean, it's a mix, but there's a ton of young guys. They're trying to get to the PGA Tour as fast as possible. To win out there, you got to go so crazy low. Can you just speak on what we're seeing from this kid going back to back?
Yeah, it's obviously wild. Winning, yeah, like you mentioned, once is hard, let alone twice. I do see on the Korn Ferry or web when I was there, it like you see a lot of people, not a lot, you see some people contend or almost get on those runs. I know Gore, I think, won three in a row.
He did it twice of the 10 people to go back to back weeks. Gore was two of the 10.
And then Jaeger, you know, almost went back to back. So I think that it's tailored to that a bit on that tour, in the sense that a lot of the courses set up very similarly in that you have to go really low, and it's usually because of the weather, really soft. So I think you've seen this before. I've never even like fathomed the leading or co-leading eight of those rounds. I mean, because I remember I played quite well for a 2 week stretch once my rookie year, but like, you know, I happened to just come out on top at the end of the one of the weeks, like just because of a good last day. And then the next week, you know, I was around the lead going into the third round, and then, you know, didn't play very well. So then Sunday, like I, you know, back up with a good round just to get back into like good, you know, a good standing. I mean, just to continue to have to do all the media stuff and then the pressure of all of that just over and over and over again to have your game just keep beating everybody is insane. So like I said, you know, sometimes you see people get on a hot streak, but I think that's like another level of hot streak. That's just an absolute amazing thing for him to be able to feel about his game, to know that, you know, he can literally be better than everyone on any given day. And then that's in like for 14 days in a row. You know, he doesn't need, you know, one just like absolute blackout round. He can just keep playing his steady golf and keep leading tournaments day after day. And I just think that's something he's going to hang his hat on and be, you know, use a lot to, once he gets the PGA Tour, to have even more success. So it's pretty crazy. I unfortunately wasn't able to really follow it along until too late, when then I realized, you know, what he was doing when the social media stuff got posted. So it was just, it was crazy. You know, I don't even know if Tiger's really done much stuff like that. So yeah, that kid's going to be a, be an absolute baller, I imagine, once he makes it, once he gets to start playing on the PGA Tour.
So the mentality when you were playing Webb, do you feel like your mentality was just always offense, never defense? And the PGA Tour is a little more defense. Is that fair to say? Or is there little of defense to be played when you're playing those kind of soft Webb golf courses?
I guess probably more the former.
Okay.
The offense is just
like, if you shot even, you just felt like you just did nothing. I mean, is that kind of the feeling?
There's definitely, I guess it depends. There's definitely a few courses
like Ohio State
that you play a little. Yeah. You play a little more like golf, quote unquote, Indiana, Evansville, which is now the Tour Championship, I guess. So that one's a tough one. And then Wichita's can be a little more windy. So it's a little more defense, although the scores go low. But yeah, I mean, you go to Springfield, Missouri, and if you're even through four, you are already getting lapped. So it's tough, but I think you get you in a groove of doing that. So that's good. But yeah, PGA Tour, you're playing, it's almost like a completely different game. I think it's why you see some of these guys first jump out here from the Corn Ferry season and go straight in, because they've been playing really well. Obviously, like a lot of them just got, on a hot streak and got their card as of late. And then because the PGA Tour doesn't believe in an off season, you get to just start like a week and a half later. And that's a big benefit, I would think, because you're riding confidence and you don't know, and you're playing aggressive. But I do think that to win, you need to play aggressive out here. However, that's also where you have to like find your balance. But a lot of those guys will have really good runs in the fall to start. And it makes sense. You're playing good and you're not scared of golf courses because you've literally been taught not to be afraid of the golf course. You're just to make birdie everywhere. But I do think that at some point that falls off and you start to realize, oh man, these courses are a lot more demanding, and pars become a lot better than the thought of birdie. And like, you plot your way around a lot more. You look at a course like Muirfield Village this week, it's going to be really hard. Now, I know it's raining a ton, so I'm hoping that doesn't change too much. But when we played the practice showing yesterday, all we're talking about is how hard this course is going to play if it can stay firm. I don't know what it'll do once it gets soft, but or how it will play, I guess, as far as how easy it will be. But if it was like it was yesterday for a week, it would be just like, it would just be demanding in every way. So all of a sudden you start to play those kinds of events and the offense becomes a little too much. But it's also good to have some of that, talking to Bones and like realizing that's what Phil must have been so good at. It's really hard to overpower the courses out here, whereas on the Corn Ferry it's obviously seems to be more of, fire, like see if it's your week and kind of fire away, because you can also get up and down from my memory from so many spots short-sighted out there as opposed to out here. Like I said, especially on a course like this one, it's like you hit it in the wrong spot here and you're trying to take 20 feet for par and see what happens. So that's your big difference in the tours. But it's also good to learn how to be aggressive, because this tour will teach you almost trick you into like being afraid a bit more.
I have a good idea to just throw in the middle of the podcast. If you win back to back on the Corn Ferry Tour, you just should be auto. Just go straight to the tour. It's only
happened
10 times. I mean, that's the thing, is if it happened 50 times, I would say no. But when something has happened for the 10th time ever in the history of this tour, it's obviously very hard to do in a very rare feat. So let's just send him up. That's all we need. Back-to-back weeks, you're sent right up. Let's see what you can do on the PGA Tour. Because, Max, the idea here, like a Cameron Young, right? He's playing great golf. You mentioned it. If he was on the tour tomorrow, there'd be a chance he'd be scary. I mean, he's playing great. He's swinging great. He feels good. He feels confident. This would be kind of the time to get it. I mean, that's what we saw with Jason Gore. You mentioned Jason Gore, right? He gets promoted to the PGA Tour and wins, a couple of weeks later. It's carry that momentum on to another tour and give a young kid a chance in that capacity would be interesting. That's just my random good idea. A couple other things I wanted to ask you about. Have you played Olympic Club, by the way? Have you ever played Olympic Club in San Fran for the U.S. Women's Open this year?
Yeah, I think I've played it two times. The ocean more, but I've played that Lakes course where they do the championship two times.
I've walked Lakes and I played the 18th hole randomly. I know that's kind of strange. And I've played the ocean course, and the Cliffs course. I played 100 holes in the Cliffs course in one day. Shout out Tom Coyne. But why is it that the Lakes is so hard? Because I keep hearing about lies. I keep hearing about like moving the ball off the tee. I read some Tiger quote that he said, it's the hardest driving golf course we play at any point ever on tour. Greens are really small. Can you just kind of take it as your golf analyst for the week, can you take us through Olympic Club?
Yeah, the reason it's so hard is because a bunch of the holes dogleg, but the fairway slopes away from the dogleg. So your ball has to be curving a lot, like not a little, like it has to be curving a lot or land on the exact, like dead on perfect line to hold the fairway. I remember during the US Open watching it, and the fairways were really firm. So it was, you know, there's a few holes that you almost had to run it through the rough short to get it to slow down. They also have a couple tee shots where there's a tree that will be on the corner of that fairway, and those trees there in San Francisco catch a lot of golf balls. So like you're almost bringing in the opportunity to like lose your golf ball by pushing that corner. So, but it's too long to not take on the dog leg. So yes, you really need to work the ball or else you're going to go in the rough, and then obviously rough it any tournament, but especially US Open, is going to be a serious pain. But that's really what they do out there. It's just, it's awkward. It requires a lot of precision. My favorite hole is 18, and it's not like that at all. It's like a 4 or 5 iron from the tees we played. But it's like the fairway is like 18 yards wide.
Tiny.
And the green's really tiny, but it's pretty much like, hey man, we're letting you hit a 5 iron, you know? So like you should be able to, in your head, you should be able to hit it that straight. Obviously it's still a tough shot. But it's an interesting golf course. It's, you play San Francisco fog or the heavy air, the ball doesn't go anywhere. It's cold. I'm excited to watch. I've never, not a huge fan of the fairways kicking away from the dog leg.
Okay.
But I do like the idea that it makes you work the ball. Like you truly have to work the ball to hit the fairways. Like I said, unless you want to challenge those trees and then run it through the rough to get to the fairway. Cause it was like Tiger mentioned, like it is one of the hardest driving courses I've probably ever been on.
Tiger, I mean, in 2012, if you remember, through two rounds, Tiger, I think he was tied for the lead, but he was trying to hoylake his way around Olympic. Remember, he kept trying to hit irons all over the place, and it just eventually caught up to him, because either you miss a fairway with an iron and it's kind of auto bogey, or you start to pull driver if you're needing to be aggressive, and if you're not hitting it straight, then you're in the rough there as well. You know, that's the only time I ever ran into your boy, Aaron Rodgers. I was out walking, that was the Tiger, Phil, maybe Bubba group. Bubba was like, it just won the Masters, I think. And it was like Bubba Watson, right? And it was Tiger, Phil, Bubba. And I remember I was walking down the fairway and some guy's like, hey, 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 how they doing? I turned around, it was Aaron Rodgers. I was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. And I like walked and chatted with him for 2 or 3 holes. And then people started shit talking him. And he had a great line to a Vikings fan. And I was like, this guy's a pretty, pretty big legend. I really liked that move. So that was my Aaron Rodgers experience.
I remember that round too, because my buddies went up to watch, and they went and watched the same group you were, Tiger, Phil, and Bubba. And Phil had this crazy black outfit on.
Yes.
With, like, these pants that had like diamonds, it looked like, in like on them. And my friend said that he texted me and said, I think Phil Mickelson's wearing space pajamas. And I will never forget that. It made me laugh so hard.
It's an interesting time in Phil's career back then, in the early 2012 time. Every year. And by the way, we hadn't even talked on Phil winning the PGA. I know you said you were really frustrated over the weekend. I know you didn't watch much of the PGA. Did you watch anything late with Phil or no?
No, I didn't watch anything. Although Lacey was watching the last hole and basically yelled, come watch this, just because everybody was, obviously the crowd came in and was following them closely. So that was really cool to watch. I love when that they let that happen. Obviously, got a little aggressive with Brooks having to like literally swim out of the crowd. But it was really fun. You know, legend, like you get to watch him win and it's incredible. Didn't see it coming. I don't think anybody saw it coming.
Wasn't a big pick.
He's an amazing. It proves that when you're that talented, it just takes a week of it clicking and it all can go your way. But he's tremendous, man. I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I can imagine my body being able enough to keep playing at that age. I guess imagine being like that, as invigorated as he is to keep getting better, because he still works really hard and he is really passionate. And that's pretty amazing for someone who's pretty much been the best or second best of this his entire life. That's a lot going on. So it's just my hat's off. That was one of the most impressive things I think we'll ever see.
Yeah, it's a good point you make about kind of the mindset of getting older and still wanting to grind. I remember I was having lunch with Steve Flesch. He was like 48 or 49, and he was talking about just this, and he was saying how, you know, he can still hit the golf shots and he still has the game, but it was the hours of grinding that just don't seem interesting to him at all. And he was trying to work on that because he knew obviously he was getting close to 50 and he was going to have a chance to make a run on the Champs Tour, so he had to get, you know, more involved in terms of practicing and grinding on the golf course. But he said that's the hardest thing, is like, I don't want to go play nine holes on a Tuesday as a practice round. You know, I don't want to go spend 3 hours out there, you know. And so what he said he'd do is he'd go out at like 6 a.m., like first off, you know, it'd be him and Jerry Kelly or somebody like that just to get it in, but to avoid those long practice rounds, because the in-between time was the stuff that he really struggled with. And I saw a great quote from Xander this week about Phil, and just talking about Phil still being that interested, kind of basically that interested student about golf, still asking questions and wanting to know things and trying different stuff. I mean, even the psychotic idea of changing your putting grip on the 71st hole of a major because the ball was sitting down too far or something, whatever the hell he said to Justin Thomas's tweet. And you're like, wait, what? What are you talking about? I mean, I wouldn't change my putting grip if I'm playing a nine-hole match at Longshore for $12. And this guy's changing his putting grip on the 71st hole of a major championship. But that willingness to tinker is something that I think is unique, because I think a lot of tour pros are like that. I mean, you know, I don't know if you're still playing a 7-wood, but just to throw a 7-wood in and a different putter, and you went 2 weeks later with a new putter. I mean, you've got to be willing to do different stuff. And I think that's actually something pro golfers are amazing at, and something that amateur golfers really struggle at, because there's a fear of something different with the golf swing or with your golf bag.
Yeah, that's a good point. Phil definitely, he might do that to keep himself interested, perhaps. And also, you know, that's kind of just like his DNA is that, like, he thinks a lot. So when he switches to a claw grip on the 71st hole, because the ball's in a little indention and he knows that with the claw, you know, he's going to get a bit more loft and the ball is going to come out better. It's just like most people probably have thought of that, but not like as it's happening.
Right.
Let alone to, like, you know, but that's him. Like, that's why he's been so good. That's why he talks about, even Bones brought it up on one of the holes I played. What, I can't remember what hole it was. I hit a shot really well. And it was in the practice round. I hit a shot really well. To like, you know, 12 feet, and I want to say Jordan hit next, same club. He hit it really well, looking on the same line. They came up a couple yards short and hit the hill and came back down the hill. And Bones was like, did you tee that up? And I said, yeah. And he goes, okay, because Jordan didn't tee it up. And that's the thing Phil's talked about, that you get four extra yards when you tee it up, because there's, you know, you catch a little bit more on the sweet spot. I don't know. But it's just like, that both their brains in the moment are so much further along, I feel like, than most of ours, where like we would think about that later, but that's on the forefront of their mind. That's what makes Phil so good. And his hands are just amazing. But, you know, when you're that good at something, you're a different breed. So it's, I don't know. It's crazy to think that, you know, he, like I said, he can be kind of struggling and have one good week and literally win like one of the biggest tournaments in the world. That's just how good he is. That's how much talent he has. That's what's amazing about Phil.
Do you have any good Phil stories, like a good practice round story or playing a little golf with Phil that you can share? I mean, I know there everybody seems to have something that he said or done in these matches. I mean, even earlier in the week, you know, being three up through three, and I guess he was playing with Stricker saying, I thought we'd be more up at this point, you know, like, I mean, this is like who Phil Mickelson is, like that. He's a subtly amazing trash talker, right?
Yeah. He is a special trash talker. Some of it doesn't land. But I'll give him the credit is he'll just keep firing.
Okay.
So he's a volume shooter, in my opinion. No, I'm just fine. He's, you know, he's quirky. He says some really funny stuff. He obviously always has like the ultimate, you know, card to play because like he, you know, he one time, you know, he'll always say these like subtle things. Like we were talking about the Corn Ferry Tour and like how difficult it is to get onto the PGA Tour from there. And he basically like really like to the point where I almost didn't get it, but he was just like, I just don't get why more people don't win a PGA Tour event while they're an amateur. So they can just go straight to the PGA Tour. And I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? Then I'm like, oh, and then I look at him, he's just, you know, like smiling. But he's got a lot of stories, but like one of my favorite Phil stories, first time I ever played with him, we were sitting at lunch after, this was just, you know, when we were home and we were talking about golf and putting, and I was talking about Ricky Fowler's putting stroke, and I mentioned something about his legs or something, and he was like, oh, he's like, you know, I need to try that. It's like, I think you're, you know, this is 7 years ago, like, you're doing all right, like I don't think you need to try anything. But like that's just where his brain goes. He's always trying to get a little bit better, just get a little bit better, and like obviously it paid off in dividends. So he's just, but yeah, I know a lot of trash talk stories, but they're not to me, and I don't want to steal.
I understand.
When somebody does tell these stories, I don't want to steal it because they are, some of them are really funny. But I think my all time favorite story I've heard though about him, and I'm sure a lot of you have, but was when Kuchar talked trash to him, where, you know, he had those Phil had those bad shoes on, and Matt was like, "What the hell are you wearing?" And Phil goes, "Oh, you only get to wear these when you win three Masters championships." And Matt said, "Well, I hope I only ever win two." Because the shoes are that. That's my favorite.
That's pretty, I think, good. He said Kuchar that on line. That's pretty.
Yeah,
good.
He said that on Faraday. So that's my favorite Phil story probably ever.
I did want to ask and just chat quickly about the Shin Shin Fung thing. Did you see this from the LPGA match play last week? Did you see that she just kind of said peace on the consolation match? I gotta be honest, I'm surprised this hasn't happened before. I am shocked a PGA Tour player hasn't done this, especially a high profile player going, "I'm good. I just, you know, you can give them third place. I play for victories." I need to look this up. Has Tiger played? I'm assuming he played in the consolation match before, right? I mean, I'm assuming he's finished third or fourth.
I know for them the price or the prize money difference was 22,000-ish.
Right.
I'm pretty sure for a tour event it's like 100,000-something, or for the WGC event, I think it's
maybe
like
more. Right.
Might be more. So I don't really think you're bailing on that ever. I don't think, you know, if I'm being honest, I don't think it's a great look. I think it's really smart by her. I'm really happy she did it because it's hilarious. It's like a egg in your face type thing. Like it's so cool.
Right.
I would never do that. I totally get and respect every reason why she did it. But I couldn't.
Not in your DNA.
I'd rather third than fourth.
Right.
You know? And I get she's trying to get ready for this Open. She had an interesting week in the sense that she kept playing a bunch of extra holes. But I don't know. It's just, I think it'd leave a weird taste in my mouth. But it is great because, you know, I guess I have always thought, like, what if somebody was just like, yeah, never mind. Like, what if her and Aria decided to, like, part up and say, we're both not going to play. And then they split the money anyways. Like, I think that would be hilarious. But obviously, I imagine the sponsors weren't super stoked about that.
Probably not the most excited about not having another match on TV.
Yeah, but I guess I don't know what, you know, you could do because you can't make people play in the sense that then they would just come up with a BSWD,
right?
I guess so. I mean, she used her. I like when the players use their power just to say, all right, well, you know, I don't care. Because at times, you know, with this Naomi Osaka thing going on right now,
right,
it's cool. She's like, all right, well, then I'm out because I just don't want to do this. And it's like, man, like, you know, that's cool because, you know, we live an awesome life. But at times, like, we're still kind of people trying to be people and stay sane. It's a, you know, a lot of traveling, a lot of stuff going on. Shen's playing, you know, way too many holes right before a major in crazy heat. So it's totally her right. So sometimes, you know, it's shocking, but sometimes it's fun to see. I wouldn't be surprised now that she's done it, that she'd be the last. I think there's going to be more of this that might go on. But yeah, it's just, I can't believe somebody had the guts to do it. It's pretty cool.
I need her to win. I need her to win this week.
Yeah,
it'd be amazing if she won the US Open. Like, you could never trash talk this decision for the rest of the history of golf. If she goes on to win, you think she's the smartest player ever.
Oh, I forgot to ask you, Shane, because we didn't talk about, did you see the Brooks and Bryson video?
Yes, yes, definitely saw it.
They need to get paired together, right? At US Open.
It would be amazing. Well, okay. You know, it's just, you know, the Adam Scott quote keeps sticking in my brain here. Adam Scott saying earlier this year, and I mean, you're on tour, you can speak on this, but, you know, Adam Scott saying outside of 4, 5, 6 events a year, this is an entertainment product. And I think that it wasn't even a negative thing he was saying. I don't necessarily think he's saying that's a bad thing. I mean, sports are, in its essence, entertaining, right? That's why we watch them. I mean, I watch basketball. Maybe you've got $50 on a game. You know, maybe your favorite team's playing. But you're also just watching because it's entertaining and it takes you away from life, or it gives you something to enjoy on an evening. And this is, like, it's a major championship and it's a U.S. Open and it's very serious, but it's entertaining. Like, everybody would watch that. Everybody would watch it. They'd have cameras. You know, like when like MJ'd be on the in his prime, MJ'd be on the bench and they have that camera that's just dedicated to MJ, even though he's not playing. It's like they would have cameras dedicated to these guys in between shots because everybody'd want to know what was going on. And knowing those two guys, they probably something would happen. I mean, not like they'd get in a fight or something, but I'm sure there'd be something said or a comment made or whatever, because obviously both Brooks and Bryson are aware of what's new in 2021 in terms of the PIP and added value to what they could potentially do. So if you don't do this, if you don't pair them together for the US Open, then it's losing out on such an opportunity. I mean, you know, you want your...
This never happens.
It never happens. We don't get true beefs in golf, Max. I mean, what's the last, like, true beef we've had? I'm trying to think. I was racking my brain last week trying to think of, like, true players that didn't like each other and weren't scared to say it. That's the difference. I mean, there's been plenty of players that don't like each other, but it's not like they go on the mics and say anything about it.
Yeah, the closest thing we had to beef was like literally beef Johnston when he played on tour like a couple of events. That's like the closest thing we've had real beef.
It's a good job. I like that line. That was really
thanks,
good.
Man.
That was good.
Here all week. Yeah, I just think it's great. I mean, it was not a lot in the golf media world in general. Like, is too, as you know better than anybody, is too new where it's like that exciting. Like, it doesn't really get my attention that much. You know, you'll have a video here and there and it'll make you laugh and then you'll go on to the next thing. But like, Lacey and I like played the video over our like loudspeaker in the house to see if Bryson said anything. Like, you know,
you guys are doing deep dives into it.
So, because like you said, it's just entertaining and it was really fun, funny to see. I didn't know that they had, like, I guess you could tell that they didn't really get along, but I'd never actually seen him go back and forth or anything. But this was like kind of the first time we've had like a Twitter back and forth of like two main players. You know, sometimes we'll get it with the, you know, us like, you know, normal people, like players, like average guys, but them, you know, the top 5, 10 in the world is,
it's a great point. That's a great point
at all. It's usually, you know, golf is so, you know, buttoned up and proper. And for, you know, this is why Brooks is so good for the game of golf, because he really does say things that most people wouldn't. And it's in this case started something that's really fun and new. And you know, that's, I feel like he's kind of been the catalyst for a few of these things, you know, for a while now.
Brooks is playing chess. We didn't realize it. I didn't realize this whole time. It was Koepka that was just a step of, he was a couple of roads past. As you get set for kind of Thursday and getting back into it, how are you kind of mentally? Because I know it's something you've been very sharp on this year, and you've been reading a lot and talking a lot on the podcast. Like, how are you in terms of the way you're thinking about your own golf game, like where you're at as you get set for Muirfield Village and of course the US Open and all the stuff you got coming up?
Yeah, I'm great. It's been nice having more like one on one off for a little while. I think the beginning of the season was exhausting, but I'm good. Everything's fun. I'm excited to be here. I love this course. They changed it quite a bit. Man, it is raining so hard.
Are you playing today?
No, I don't think we're going to be allowed to go today. But yeah, they changed it a lot. You know, 15 is literally a completely different hole. 5 is basically a different second shot or third shot. He changed a bunch of the stuff around the greens and on the greens, some super subtle, some not. There's much more runoffs with fairway grass instead of deep rough. So that'll be interesting and new. You know, even like the back hill on 18, where people would always hit that draw in there and then it'd run up the hill and back down to like gimme, it's not nearly as steep. So the ball's not going to roll all the way back down now, which means that you can't hit it as close, or you probably won't hit it as close, but you also would have a chance if you go long to get up and down. So those things are always make like the mental side of things fun when it's a little different and you feel like you're playing a new golf course. So yeah, so all is good. I'm excited. I feel like, you know, my coach is here and I feel like yesterday you hit the ball nicely. I've been really working on, you know, when you play majors, it's interesting because I feel like it shows you exactly what you need to get better at. And for me, it's just my short game and my putting just has been lacking. So it just slaps in the face because you're playing a course that's going to be demanding in every level. And I hit the ball great. I think I was one of the better drivers in strokes gained for the 2 days. So it was nice to go home and have a plan on what I was, you know, what I need to keep getting better at. So in that, like I said, and when you're going one on, one off a little more, so it's really easy to stay mentally sharp. You get much more excited to be at events. It doesn't become like too repetitive or anything, which is cool.
I've got a flight. I've got a good idea here. Good idea is just hound Max Homa to play golf with him
because he caves
apparently. That's the thing. Can you explain to people that aren't on Twitter or don't pay close enough attention this dude that has just, he is relentless.
Yeah, he tweeted at me 26 days ago now, and he said day one of asking me to play with him. And I responded, you know, day one of me saying I'm busy that day. And a bunch of people liked it. And he got, you know, a bunch of whatever. And so he did it again the next day. And I think I responded again. And then I've taken a couple of days off, but he's kept tweeting at it. And, you know, I knew in my head after like 5 or 6 days on day 25, I would say, yeah, because that's my favorite number. And I'm never going to do it again. Just FYI.
Yeah, so don't tweet at Max now to play golf, even though I did see some either golfers and other people were sending you funny Twitter requests, which I've really enjoyed.
Yeah, no, it's great. And it'll be fun. I'm going to try to figure out how to make it into a charity thing and raise some money, maybe make it in like a little like match type thing.
Sell the other two spots, maybe, yeah, you know, donate
that. I'll figure out something. I'm pumped. It's fun. The only problem with all of this these days, it truly is annoying. It's like even like Graham DeLette, your boy, who's my good buddy. Like I saw him talk about how it's, you know, basically like, oh, you know, the PIP thing plays a big part in it. And I will say it to the face that it's nothing to do with anything I do.
Right.
I don't have a chance in hell of winning it. I promise. I've checked.
What if you win the US Open and the Open? What if you win
both? That would help. Yeah.
Okay.
You so think then that you helps. Can go back on my tweets and say I did it for the PIP. But just like nowadays, like anytime like a golfer tweets, the call, he's trying to get that PIP money. it's like, man, just like that,
sometimes I'm just doing it.
I just wanted to do this because it's funny every time, you know, we do anything. I think it's really just to be like, to have fun, you know. Shout out to Justin Thomas, my Feel Good Friday, for giving the check to Michael Visacki so we can keep playing golf. I mean, it's just the most tremendous thing. I guarantee you that he didn't really want it to be videoed or brought like shouted out to the Open. I'm glad it was, so we could see how good a guy is. But like, you could tell it was just like, you know, someone was like, oh, we need to throw a camera on this when they found out. But it was just a tremendous thing for Justin to do. And of course, you still get, you know, people being like, oh, this is a great idea for the PIP, or this is a great, how much money did he give him? Because like, you know, because they want to judge essentially like how much, like, you know, because Justin has a lot of money that he should be giving more. Like, it's just, there's nobody these days can just do something with, well, just because they want to do it. So I wanted to shout him out for doing it and just kind of, not really doing it for publicity. He just did it, and I thought that was really cool. And but yeah, it's just the day and age we live in now. Is like everything gets broadcast, and if just because you want to do something, someone's going to find an angle on why you did it. And it's just like KVV made me laugh, but he said, you know, my normal brain, like, this is such a good idea for me to play with Armin, or this is such like a nice thing. And he said my cynical internet poison brain, he said, like, Max is, you know, caved in way too quickly, and he's only doing this for X, Y, and Z. And, you know, Weezer, the band, took way longer to do their other one. And it's just like, how are any of these things linked? like, how are any of these things? Like if in one try I said, yeah, man, let's go play golf, no one would have thought twice. I found it funny. Like I said, after the fifth day, I knew if I could make it, if he made it to 25, I'd like to do it. And it'll be cool. This is why I've always, you know, like social media for this aspect, is you get to interact with people and grow the game of golf a little bit. So it's just an interesting world we live in. But yeah, sure, it's all for PIP. Armin's actually me. It's my burner account. I've been setting this up for weeks.
Now that would have been next level thinking, Max. I'd have been very, very impressed if all this came back to you and you tweeting at yourself from another account. Golf, by the way, Golf Pride reached out to Armin's, like, I'm gonna regrip this club before. I'm assuming they'll probably get other stuff from some other sponsors. But anyway, but if you're listening to this, for God's sakes, don't send Max any tweets about wanting to play golf. He's not gonna say yes. This is a one-off situation. We are probably, I'd say this is going to be a year of this, by the way, of anything that happens in golf is going to get played up as a PIP play.
Yeah,
anything,
for sure.
No matter what you do, any funny thing you do on the golf course, any interaction. God forbid you actually get in an argument with somebody, right? I mean, if you were actually upset about something, it'd be like, oh, here we go again. Here we go. PIP play. But I think after about a year, it'll probably wane off a bit. But do you have any more flights besides JT, which was a very cool video? I urge anybody that hadn't seen it to go look at it. And you know what I say? This is my take on this, Max. I don't care if it was a PIP play. It was awesome.
Yeah. It's always a thing. Like, did you do that nice thing to be nice, or did you do that nice thing to get attention? It's like, well, does it ever really matter? Cause you did the nice thing.
It's the Phoebe Buffay thing, right? There's no selfless acts.
That's a great point. So it's just, yeah. So, I mean, I believe this was a selfless act. Let's just say it wasn't, which I don't believe so, but let's just say it wasn't. Who really cares?
Who cares?
It was like one of the nicest things I've seen someone do unprompted in forever. And I mean, I'm a huge fan of JT, and I'm just really proud of him for doing that. I think that was just really cool. I do not have any more flights. That was my main thing I wanted to remember to say, because I just think it really shocked me, I guess, is the thing. You don't see that very often. I was impressed that JT called and was like, hey, let's play some golf. You know, they got to play practice round, because I know Michael seems like one of those like really cool guys that's just really appreciative anytime he's playing in a big event and being around the big guys. He's not shy about trying to look like act cool about that. He's open about it. And for JT to not only reach out, but then, you know, help him continue his golf career financially, that's just like, it rocked my world. So it's really, really cool.
Is this a thing that, and not to name names, is this a thing that pro golfers that have made it, if you will, I mean, PGA Tour players, do you see them kind of supporting either ex-teammates or friends?
Yeah.
Is this something you see happen out there? I mean, obviously it doesn't get the publicity, but does this happen more often than we know about?
For sure. It happens actually quite often from what I understand. But rarely to, I guess, somebody you just like don't know at all.
Right.
So that's where this, I feel like, is a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, the mini tour world, you know, it's funny. We're watching the F1 show right now, and I believe this is true. If you're an F2 driver, you have to pay to drive the car. I mean, F1 drivers make,
wow,
you know, $1 trillion, right? I mean, if you're, I've decided, Cindy brought this up. She said it's got to be the most competitive sport in the world. There's 20 spots, right? And that's it. And so it's got to be. But, you know, I mean, you go one step down to an F2, and it's like you're paying or you're doing something like that. So, you know, I played mini tour golf back before, you know, it was before when it was extremely expensive because it was kind of pre-08. And, you know, I mean, you're talking like 25 or 30 down to start the year. I mean, that's just base. That's like to get into all the events you want to play in for a full season and stuff. And if you're not making any money, it's just it's burn the check, burn the check, burn the check week after week after week. And so then you start to think about selling spots or, you know, you're trying to get more money from somebody else and you have to ask for money. I mean, it's stressful as hell. So for anybody to do any of this stuff on video or otherwise, I mean, to help out somebody chasing their dream, that's like what life's about. You know, that's literally why you want to be a human being, is if you can help someone achieve what they're trying to eventually get to, you know, that's why we live. I mean, hopefully that's why we live, unless you're a complete asshole. It's why we want to be around, right?
Yeah, it's just, yeah. And I guess it happens more often than we see in general. But these days, when all the bad stuff seems to be so public, it's nice when the good stuff's public too.
Last thing, your golf bag. Is there anything new in your bag that we don't know about? Or is it just, are we locked and loaded on what you're playing with right now, headed into Memorial and then into the U.S. Open?
I think I have a new putter this week. It's like my old.
You think
design.
You have a new putter?
I have three putters with me at the moment, but I think I'm going to switch to this new one. It's like my old design, the one with like the saber tooth, the one I call like the JT putter.
Yeah, yeah.
But with the milled face, like the big one I've been using. So I put with it yesterday and I really liked it. So that would be the only new thing
okay.
in my bag.
Okay. So maybe a new putter. It's Wednesday morning and maybe not a practice round today. And Max is on the fence about what his flag stick's going to be. I like that. I like that approach. We know we had a couple of weeks off. Obviously, we had major and then just some stuff going on. And you know what? I mean, we have other jobs, which is kind of the joy of this.
Yeah.
My favorite thing, by the way, bro, is when we don't do a podcast for a week and I get three tweets like, "Did you guys stop doing the pod?" I'm like,
"Yeah.
Have you been around? Like, this is kind of what we do. This is kind of how
it's
we do it.
Hard
like,
to do it on a schedule.
We can't do it every single time, especially when Max is playing multiple weeks in a row. But we're going to try to have a pre-US Open one. I'm assuming we'll have one sometime early next week, kind of following what you do at Memorial. You'll be back in Arizona, right? After this week?
Next week will be easy.
Sweet. Awesome. Awesome. Anything else you got, buddy?
No, all good. Good luck. Good luck building the
Oh, my God. I mean, this is one of those chores that you just keep coming. Like, I'm doing other annoying chores to avoid having to do this. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's like, I will do the dishes. I need to vacuum the basement.
Yeah.
Like, what else do you need?
The best way to stop procrastinating on something is to have to give yourself something worse to do. So you'll go do the first thing better. I did that the other day. I didn't want to do laundry. And next thing you know, I did the same thing. I did it when I did the dishes and then went and like finally was like, all right, you got to do the laundry at some point. Like now the house is like, you know, getting better. So it's just amazing some things just turn you off so bad. You'll do anything to get out of it.
Dude, putting stuff together is just, it's just brutal.
No,
I want to, you know what we need to do? Here's a good idea. Let's start a company that just sends everything they make to you fully put together. Just never have to worry about it. I don't know. We'll have to have a box company that does that as well. Max, have a great week. Play well. Excited to watch. Everybody, it's going to be a great week for golf. We've got Women's Open, NCAAs, and then we're getting closer and closer to Torrey. It's going to be fun. We'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Wash your hands. Tell Henry happy second birthday.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.